Going Linux, Episode 69, Listener Feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you are new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you. Each month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode like this one. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, Larry appears live on the Computer America show. We post those shows, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes. In our user experience episodes, we take, generally, 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
And during month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users building their confidence and competence with Linux.
In today's episode, listener feedback. We hope you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Hey Tom, I have switched to Ubuntu 9.04 Jaunty Jackalope.
Me too.
I did it a week ago, and boy, I have I'm really liking it. It's really a nice iteration of this distribution. I heard Peter Nicolaitis on the Fresh Ubuntu podcast say that he had some freezing problems. This was season 3, episode 12 of Fresh Ubuntu, if you want to go and listen to him. He said, and I was a little confused through his conversation whether he has 2 computers, a laptop, and a netbook, because he mentioned laptop at the first, HP laptop, and then he mentioned netbook at the end. He said he's putting Zubuntu on it because it couldn't handle GNOME as effectively, or whether or not he was referring to the same computer. But bottom line is he had some freezing problems. But I haven't had any problems with freezing at all. How about you, Tom?
I sort of did. I've got a newer computer now. I'll talk about that in a minute. And for the first time, I'm able to play real games. And I found the games freezing up and going from full screen to like 3/4 screen. But I think I solved that. I think what was happening was, while the game was in full screen, the timer for the screensaver was starting to count down.
That would do.
In other words, it didn't see any input because the game was grabbing it all. I don't know. This is me trying to figure out magical stuff and giving it an explanation. But making the countdown, the time until the screensaver kicks in longer, seems to have fixed that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I also noticed in the test screencast you sent me that you had downloaded Sauerbraten, which is one of those shoot 'em up games. Were you playing that one?
Kill the monsters, you bet.
Yeah. What I've noticed in, I use Sauerbraten as well to pass the time when I've got free time and haven't played it for several months. But I did notice, as well as the screensaver, the compiz effects can sometimes affect the games. So I usually turn those off while I'm playing a game. So I'm not exactly sure that that was causing all of the problems that I was having, but it certainly was causing some, because as soon as I turned it off, it ran a lot smoother. And just, I think some of the processing cycles that it would be using to manage the super duper whiz bang wobbly windows and all those other neat effects should have been, you know, let's not mess up the effects here. Apply all the processing to the game. Let's do it right.
Right. And you know, we have had listeners write to us and call us saying this doesn't work and that doesn't work. And sometimes the solution is turn off the roaring fire and the spinning cubes and all that stuff.
Yes.
And it would seem unrelated to what they were doing, but it sort of works.
Yeah, I've noticed on the computer that I'm using at home, my HP, I can put just about any of the Compiz effects on there, and it works just fine, including things like transparency of windows and things like that. But on my work computer, which is a ThinkPad T60, the video driver in there just can't handle the transparency. It can handle just about any other effect, fire, wobbly windows, beaming in, beaming out, all of that stuff. But once you start using transparency, it just dies. It freezes. Huh. So I just avoid that effect and impress
everybody else. Yeah, so if you want to use the whiz-bang eye candy, just bear in mind that there might be some things you can't use or that it's better not to use.
Exactly, and it might be a computer hardware issue, not an Ubuntu or other Linux distribution issue or even a Compiz issue. So anyway, I have installed, since I have a 64-bit computer, I tried 64-bit Ubuntu, and if you recall, I tried that with 8.10, I guess it was, and didn't have all that much success. I had a few little niggling problems with it that made me switch back to 32-bit, and many of those problems have gone away, but I still don't think I'm going to stick with 64-bit. I'm recording this episode using the 64-bit Ubuntu, but I don't think I'm going to be keeping it. Some of the issues that I'm having, and I'm not sure that they're all related to 64-bit, but in the user interface, some of the sliders, for example, for the settings in Audacity, in particular the compressor effect that I use for some of the processing, they just appear as a button with nowhere to slide them. I can use the arrows to actually change the settings, but nothing changes on the screen. So it's a user interface issue. And I don't know whether that's an Audacity issue or whether that's a 64-bit Ubuntu issue. I'll find out when I put the 32-bit in.
Is there a huge advantage to going 64-bit? I don't know.
When you're doing videos and audio, the rendering time for especially videos is reduced because it's using the processors more effectively. But for the kind of audio that we're doing and the kind of video that I'm going to be doing with screencasts, I don't think that it's going to have a big difference. So I'm quite happy to switch back to 32 and just wait for 64-bit to catch up. Some of the other things that I have noticed, and again, I don't know whether this is an Ubuntu 9.04 problem or whether this is a 64-bit problem, but I can't get Synergy to work. That's the program that allows you to connect two computers together using the same keyboard and mouse. Or maybe it's just a firewall issue. I know that I read somewhere that some of the firewall settings by default may have been changed in Ubuntu 9.04, but I'll troubleshoot that once I get the 32-bit operating system on again. I know I'm not going to be sticking with the 64-bit. And the two primary issues that are making me switch back to 32-bit are this Synergy issue, because I am definitely a regular user of Synergy.
Sure.
But the real kicker for me is the same problem that I had last time. I have a network printer. It's actually a printer connected to a network print
wireless?
Server, a wireless print server.
Okay.
And when I have the 64-bit operating system installed and click print, it takes easily 10 times longer for it to actually print out on the printer than it does with the 32-bit operating system. So it may be a driver issue. I've tried switching drivers. I just can't fix it under 64-bit, and I don't have time to mess with it anymore.
Why suffer if it's really not giving you that much advantage anywhere?
Yeah, right. And it's okay if I don't need to have the printout in a hurry. But, if I'm printing something out and I need to take it with me, like directions on Google Maps or something like that, I want it right away because I'm leaving. So it can be a bit of a problem.
Yeah, just plain old Ubuntu out of the box works good enough. Why mess with the 64-bit stuff? Wait till it grows up, matures a little bit.
Yeah, it has come a good distance since 8.10, but it's not quite ready for me yet. So.
Yeah, let it ripen.
Yeah, there you go. So how about you? What's your experience been? on your new computer.
Oh, by the way, there is a fella in South Carolina. We'll call him Bill S. And Bill has heard me say, and he's a regular listener and contributor, he's heard me say many times, well, Larry, I can't try that out because I have a really slow computer. And he finally got sick of me saying that and sent me his old laptop, which is not that old.
Wow.
He did try giving it to a school and said, here, if a kid's going to be home sick for a while and needs a computer, send this home with him.
Yeah.
And the school called him back and said, we're sorry, this computer is too nice.
Huh. Too nice.
Yeah. They were afraid of putting it in the hands of a child because it is a pretty slick. It's HP Pavilion TX1000, I want to say, something like that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's gorgeous, so I can run whatever I want now. And if I'm running something that makes it grunt, the processor speed just jumps up and it handles it. Goes into hyperdrive.
Yeah, very nice.
So thank you, Bill. This thing is great. Oh, and Bill has an audio contribution in today's listener feedback episode as well.
All right. Well, why don't we get to Bill's comment, and we'll play that right now.
Before you play that, the way this came about, Bill and I were chatting on Skype, actually video chatting on Skype, and he said he found the coolest package, and he started to tell me, and I said, wait a minute. Let's record this for listener feedback. He said, great. So we started recording, and he started over, and here's how it came out. All right, I'm talking to Bill S. out in South Carolina. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, and you?
Not bad. It's kind of hot here.
It's kind of cold here. But so we're on Skype, and I'm using Skype call recorder, and Bill wants to talk about a software package. So, Bill, go for it. You're up.
Okay, well, Tom, I've been running across some packages like in RPM, which RPM is just basically used. It's called Red Hat Package Manager.
Sure, sure.
But it doesn't. You can't use them on your Ubuntu system, or so I thought until I looked on Google, our friend, and found out that in the repository is a little app called Alien. That's right. We get to play with an alien.
Cool.
So you open up your package manager, and what you're going to do is you're going to type in alien in a quick search, and it's going to pop up, and you're going to select it and say, select install. And what it's going to do, it's going to say, well, you need to add a few more files. Is that okay? And you say, sure. And it'll download it. It downloads just as quick, maybe about 2 minutes at the most, and it's done. And remember now, you don't have to restart, so you're good. Okay, so now you're surfing web and you find something that's on an RPM, but you can't find it in a dev file. The dev file is used by Ubuntu's system, our system that we're talking about now.
Right, Debian.
Yeah,
Debian-based.
It's Debian-based system. So that's fine. All you have to do is you download it and save it to your desktop.
Okay.
That's I'm getting to the hard part, and I tell you, this is going to be real hard, but I think anybody can do it. You're going to go and you're going to open a terminal, and that's under. If you go to your applications, it's right under your accessories, and it'll say terminal.
Sure.
And it'll open a nice terminal. Now, all you have to do is want the following. You type sudo. And sudo basically lets you run as root. And what root does is allows you to add and remove and change settings on your Linux box.
Right. Sudo is super user do.
And it will prompt you for a password. Okay. But once you type sudo, you're going to grab with your mouse.
Wait.
The
first
package.
First, we're going to type a space.
Yeah. Space. Yeah. I forgot. You got to type a space.
Okay.
And then you're going to go to your desktop. You leave the window open, your terminal window open, and you're just going to drag it to the terminal.
Okay, you're going to drag the RPM package down to the terminal.
Drag the RPM right to the terminal. Okay, this is the hardest part. on each end of the package that you've just dragged, you're gonna see two little quotes.
Okay.
You're gonna delete the quotes before and after.
Okay. So we hit backspace to hit the after one, and then the left arrow key.
The left arrow, and you're gonna take care of the one that's next to sudo. The one's closest to sudo.
Okay, so we've dragged the package down there, but we've really just dragged the name of the package.
That's all.
And it comes with quotes on it, and we have to get rid of the quotes.
That's all. And then once you do that, you hit enter, and it's going to say, I need your password. You type the password, hit enter, and guess what it does then?
Tell me.
Oh, you're going to love this. This program will go out, finds all the dependencies that you need to run this thing, grabs them, combines them, makes it into a Debian package, and puts the newly completed Debian package in your home directory. So when it's done, all you do is click it, and it will install using the Debian package manager, and you're done.
Sweet. Yeah, if you click on a .deb package, at least in the GNOME flavor, are you doing GNOME or KDE?
Oh, I'm doing GNOME.
Okay. The default is use the GDebian package installer.
Yeah, and it pretty much
it does itself.
There's not much there that boom, you're done.
Right.
But I found that, but I was looking more into depth of this thing, and I just found out some other interesting information. Just want to add, it will also do Slackware packages too.
And those end in?
They're tarballs.
Okay, tar.bz.
Yeah, and it says it does Stampede, which I don't know what Stampede is. It must be another package. But it will do all those formats, and I thought that was very interesting. So you're really not limited to anything. If you can find, and you can usually find it in an RPM or a Deb or a tar. If you find that, you pretty much can get anything you want on your system. If you
Excellent.
Can't find it in your repositories.
I'm looking at it in the package manager now, and it says Alien allows you to convert LSB, Red Hat, Stampede, and Slackware packages to Debian. That is very cool. Thank you, Bill.
No problem. I'm glad I could help. It's really helped me.
Okay. Well, you take care, and anything else you find or anybody else finds out there, send it in. We love your
Thanks, Tom.
We love your audio feedback.
Great. Tom, you and Bill did a great job on that interview.
Well, thank
you. It
turns
out to be an interview, yes, and
yeah.
Makes for great audio feedback. And again, thanks, Bill, for your contribution to the show, and thanks for your contribution to Tom.
Yeah, for
that
bringing me into the
generous.
21st century here.
Yes. Thank you. Well, shall we start with our emails?
Okay. Let's start with Richard at Black Sparrow Media, and he wrote, "Hi, Larry."
Hi, Richard. Yeah, I know you're not saying hi because he just said hi to me. But okay.
Anyway,
continue.
Hi, Larry. I hear you're having trouble finding a program for capturing video from your monitor. Try GTK Record My Desktop. It is Istanbul that works. I'm running Ubuntu 9.04, and it seems to work for me. Richard, Resonant Frequency, the amateur radio podcast, Linux in the Ham Shack. Thanks, Richard.
Right. Yes, thanks, Richard. And I did try it. In fact, Tom, you tried it independently, not knowing that Richard had sent this email, and you were trying it on 9.04. It worked great for you. You told me about it. Richard told me about it. I tried it, and it's excellent. So I think I'm going to be able to make some very good progress on those screencasts.
Yeah, people, we're going to have some screencasts for you real soon now.
Yeah. Now I've got no excuse.
It does. It's right out of the box. It works.
Yes, very nice. And I'll be screencasting on how to do the screencasts as well.
There you go.
So, now, our next email is from Fred, who wrote us this note. He said, "As I listen to your great podcast, you're not getting the thanks you deserve for your hours of work on the great website consisting of articles and very detailed show notes. Thanks again. I see a PayPal logo, so I'll throw some coins in. Fred in Kansas.
Okay, Fred, thank you. And we have been doing some really hard work on those web pages. I know, because every once in a while I go check to see what we did.
Yes.
that's all Larry on the website, folks.
Yeah, well, hey, Tom, I'm looking at some new technology that will actually give us some interactive editing ability so you can join in. If it works. Yes.
Okay.
I'll do the screencast first. Let me not mess with that until I get the
baby
screencast.
Baby steps.
Yes. Yes.
And Fred did indeed make a donation to the Going Linux podcast. Thank you so much, Fred. You are a kind and generous person. Your timing is excellent. It's almost time to pay for the website and the domain registration. Your donation will go a long way to help us defray that cost. And we're happy to know that you enjoy our podcast and the website.
Yes, thanks, Fred. Thanks for the donation, and thanks for the contribution to our listener feedback. Okay, our next email is from TJ. TJ wrote, I found this on the Gen2 forums and took a screenshot. He sent us a screenshot, and I'll read you what it says on the screenshot, because it's a screenshot of text. But he continues saying, it was obviously written by someone whose first language is not English, but still, I would cry tears of joy if this happened to me. And I'm going to read it and paraphrase a little bit for the broken English so that as our listeners are listening, they can understand what's being said.
Sure.
And here's from the screenshot. I am fond of Gen2. My wife did not want to switch to Linux because she needs Photoshop and does not like the GIMP at all. I installed a dual boot on my wife's desktop and asked her to give Linux a try for 2 weeks. I set up a special config where inside Linux she can open her Windows with VMware using the physical partition and not a virtual disk. She really liked Linux, but because Photoshop is quite slow inside the VMware, after the 2 weeks trial, she asked me to use Windows natively back again. Of course, I let her do that, sadly. The same day in the evening, she was nearly crying near a nervous breakdown. I asked her why she was in such a state. She told me that Windows is a real crap. It is impossible to understand the configuration menus. You cannot change your theme and put beautiful colors. You have only one desktop. You have some errors and you don't know why, even with Windows XP. It is slow and you don't know what's running and making this poor hard disk work so hard and blah, 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 blah. And then she ends with, oh, please, my love, reinstall Linux for me. And the last comment in the screenshot is, I will remember that day for the rest of my life.
That is beautiful. That is just beautiful.
And with that, let's move on to our next beautiful comment.
Okay, well, Bob wrote, G'day, guys.
G'day, Bob.
Thanks for the great show. Your efforts are much appreciated. Finally, after trying a lot of different Linux versions, I've settled on Ubuntu 9.04. And not only that, my brother printer and scanner work. Yahoo! So the Windows partition is history. It was just there for the printer. I'm sorry, Billy. Join the dodo. Well, good on you, mate. My question. I set up CompiS with 4 desktops and a very cool spinning cube. I can't find out how to have the individual desktop applications remain in place for the next boot up. To explain, I have Thunderbird and Firefox on 1, AbbeyWord on 2, Dolphin on 3, and Terminal on 4. These being the applications I use all the time, but when I switch off, they all done gone at the next boot. Any suggestions, guys? Thanks. Granddad with the spinning eyeballs. Bob.
Well, Bob and I exchanged a couple of emails, and I made a suggestion to him that he said did work for him. And let me read you my email to
Bob.
Can I guess? Okay.
Hibernate instead of shutting down?
That wasn't my suggestion, but that would be a good one. That would work. But here's a suggestion that keeps it permanent, even if you reboot from scratch. I wrote to Bob, thanks for the email and congratulations on your complete conversion to the land of the free. To have Ubuntu remember your previously launched applications, have you tried changing the startup application preferences? To do so, choose Preferences from the System menu, select Startup Applications, then choose the Options tab. You'll find a checkbox there that allows you to tell Linux to automatically remember running applications when logging out. If you haven't already, give that a try and let us know how it works for you. Thanks for listening. And as I said, Bob got back and said that worked great.
Perfect. Yes. Okay, so he doesn't even have to hibernate, and hibernate doesn't work all the time anyway.
Right, depending on the computer.
Yeah, depending on the machine. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now David wrote a book.
Yes, he did. Maybe we can just excerpt some chapters here. What do you think?
I'll just go for it.
All right.
David wrote, hey, Larry. Hey, Tom. Hey, David. David. My name is David, and I've been listening to the Going Linux podcast since about September of last year. That's also when I began using Ubuntu on my home PC. This is my first time writing in, and I have a question that I've been meaning to ask for about a month now. The short and sweet question is, does any version of Linux or any Linux-compatible file browser, browser is not an easy word, allow you to sort files by bitrate or dimension? Until I started using Ubuntu, I had been a lifelong Windows user, and when in Windows, using the file browser, I could tell the Windows file browser to show the files by details, then click on View from the menu bar and select Choose Details. When the Choose Details box opens, it gives a long list of things to choose from, such as bitrate, or dimensions, or durations, or file version to add to the details you wish to sort by. I find this to be very useful because I can then take a list of movies or music or pictures and sort them by which has the highest or lowest resolution, or which has the highest or lowest bitrate. I've tried to do this in Ubuntu, but when I tell Nautilus to view by details, and I bring up the list of details I want to choose from, I am given a list that is very short in comparison and does not include either dimension or bitrate. Now, I thought I could simply try using a different file browser, because I always hear how much more lightweight Nautilus is than the Windows file browser, but I recently went online and grabbed a few names of Linux file browsers, and I think I even tried one or two that I just found in the repositories, but none of them could do what I'm asking of them, and most of them even seem to be less featured than Nautilus. One of them even reminded me of a DOS file browser. I know everyone always wants things to be lightweight and quick, but I'm really hoping that someone out there thought to make a file browser that was really fully featured and could just get things done. Sorry for the long letter. Please rate me back, even if you can't help with my problem. David.
Well, we did write David back and gave him some suggestions in a few emails back and forth. And before we get into what we referred David to, for our listeners, to make the list view the default in Nautilus, you can choose Preferences from the Edit menu, select List View as the default, and then Close to save your changes. By default, Nautilus gives you the files and folders in sort of an icon view. And many people, when they have been coming over from Windows, have been using the Details view in Windows as David has and want something similar. And you can do that in Nautilus. And Nautilus is actually a well-featured browser, pretty full-featured in this area. Selecting lists from the View menu gets you to a view that's very similar to the Windows Explorer Details view. Also, from the View menu, you can select Visible Columns, which gives you several checkbox selections to control which details are visible, and that's what David was trying out. The list includes the file's name, size, type, date modified, owner, permissions, date access, group location, MIME type, octal permissions, and if you have SE Linux installed, the SE Linux context. And those are just the ones by default. Once you have the columns visible, you can actually click on the column header to sort by that dimension and click a second time to sort in the opposite direction. So although by default, Nautilus doesn't contain the particular things that David wants to sort by, if we could find a way to provide David with the actual dimensions that he wanted to sort by, Nautilus would have that capability.
Yeah, I don't think he's talking about the file size. He's talking about the aspect ratio of a video.
Exactly.
And no, Nautilus can't do that. However, if you right-click on any file and then go down to properties, if it's a video, I think it's video slash audio or something like that, the tab on the right, it will tell you the bit rate, the codecs involved, the length of the file in minutes or hours or whatever. And in our latest exchange with David, we haven't heard how he's made out, but we suggested that he take a look at extensions to Nautilus. Nautilus is designed to accept extensions and scripts that add capability to the file manager and to the GNOME desktop environment. And we'll include some links to those in the show notes. And though we haven't tried it ourselves, it really doesn't look difficult. Find a script or extension that does what you want. Place it in the appropriate folder for extensions, restart Nautilus, and you have it. If you don't like it, or if it doesn't do what you want, then just remove the script from the folder. I believe you'll have to give that script permission to run, too. We have a link to an article from Linux.com that provides an overview and an example or two. The Nautilus Info Provider script does look promising. And we have another link to an article on live.gnome.org, providing additional examples and some instructions on where to place the scripts. And there's also a link to a forum post from linuxquestions.org discussing some alternate installation information and the fact that you may need to install other components available in the repositories to make the scripts work. And let us know how that works, David.
Yes, we'd be very interested to find out. I haven't used any of the extensions to Nautilus myself, but it is a pretty powerful feature that Nautilus provides that.
I've written scripts for Nautilus, and it's a beautiful thing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know how I'd write that one.
Yeah, that, certainly the properties are there. You can see
Yeah, it might already be written.
As you said. Yeah, that's what I was hoping. And by providing David with these links and sharing them with our listeners, hopefully we'll be able to solve the issue that David is trying to solve. Yeah. Next, Ray wrote to us. Hi, Larry. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Ray. Tom, I go to the local recycle and build PCs from parts I salvage. I am sending this message from a P4 2 gigahertz with 2 gig of RAM, 250 gig hard drive, all from the dump.
Wow.
Go get yourself a new PC from the dump. Well, Ray, he's already got a new PC.
Yeah.
Courtesy of Bill. So thanks again, Bill. And Ray continues, Tom, not picking on you. I just feel bad you have no test PC. Well, we took care of that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Now, Ray continues, thought you might be interested in this. Windows RC7 versus Linux Mint RC7. Yes, same release candidate number. The Windows RC7 install on my Dell D400 installed okay, but no video driver, except basic 8-bit horrible. I had to hook it up to a wired internet connection to download a wireless driver. 2 hours later, uninstall. Next, Linux RC7 Gloria. 17 minutes later, up and running. Wireless found, sound, 1024 by 768, as far as I could tell, not a hitch. Next, my old bench test machine. Windows RC7 install, error code 5. I had to use a Vista disk to select repair, get to the DOS prompt, type D colon, then CD source slash setup, and about a day and a half later, I'm sending you this email from Windows RC7. Linux 7 RC, installed in about 20 minutes, all drivers found. P.S. I did try the newest version of Ubuntu. Mint is better. You guys are great. Thanks so much, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, Ray. That's a great review and a real-life scenario comparing two release candidates.
Sure. One word about Mint. Mm-hmm. Mint does not use the same Ubuntu repositories. So if you love those repositories in Ubuntu, you might not be able to find the same things running Mint that you did in Ubuntu.
By default, but I think you can add the standard Ubuntu repositories in the package manager.
Okay.
So I've heard other people who use Mint on a regular basis, and on the Mintcast podcast, there is a Mintcast podcast, I've heard that you can just point the package manager to those standard Ubuntu repositories, and it'll pull the same stuff out. Of course, they won't be tailored for Mint, but that's okay. You still have all the Mint tailored stuff available to you.
Sure.
In that minty fresh flavor.
Yeah, and it's green. Mm-hmm. And next up, our regular listener, Tony, wrote to us. Hello, guys. Hey, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, it's me again. I have, I think, a serious problem. I have both MPlayer and Flash. Neither one is working right, MPlayer being the default player. I need help as quickly as possible. I won't be able to hear your podcasts or anything, for that matter, unless the problem gets rectified. The exact problem that they both have is that whatever plays for only a few seconds, and then it goes out, audio or video. I really need help on this one, guys. All the best, Tony.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Tony. I had a problem trying to figure out what could be causing this. Tony is using Linux Mint, and my first thought, it might be Pulse Audio problems. I've been hearing a lot of issues with Pulse Audio, and since he's using Mint, and the version of Mint that is based on 9.04 isn't out yet, that's the RC7 we were talking
right.
about in Ray's contribution, they're still using the 8.10 version of Ubuntu to base Mint on. So I know they haven't got whatever fixes are in place for Pulse Audio as a result of Ubuntu moving to 9.04. So my first thought is maybe that's the issue, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I can really relate to this one. I have a non-Linux friend, and I took a shiny new Mint disk to his house and used the Wubi-style install and put Linux Mint on his computer and then started showing it off. And I tried opening a video, which played perfectly, but no sound.
Ouch.
And I didn't really have time to go after the problem. I had to leave, so I walked away with egg on my face. Now, I'm not blaming Mint for this. I'm just saying I ran into something similar, and I'm sure that the Mint people out there are jumping up and down and saying, well, stupid, you should have done this. Well, right out of the box, it didn't have sound.
Yeah.
We also suggested that he looked in the forums. Ubuntu forums has a thread with multiple sound solutions for ALSA and Pulse Audio. It's referred to as the 10,000-page guide to sound troubleshooting and configuration for Hardy Heron 8.04 and Intrepid 8.01 and Jaunty 9.04, and we will put a link to that in the show notes.
And hopefully that'll help Tony, and maybe that'll help you with your non-Linux friend.
Yeah, if I get over there again.
If he even has you in the house.
Yeah.
After messing up his computer. Anyway, and I don't know whether this is related to the previous email, but Tony wrote an additional email to us saying, hi, guys.
Hey, Tony again.
Hi, Tony again. Yes. I have got a good one for you. By default, on my computer, all media uses MPlayer, and even under Firefox, my intention is to have Caffeine as my default player. Can you help me with this one? All the best, Tony.
And what we suggested, or what Larry suggested that Tony do, is step one, install Caffeine, and you do that with sudo space apt-get caffeine space caffeine-mozilla. And Caffeine is spelled K-A-F-F-E-I-N-E. Or you can just use the package manager to install both packages. And then step two is go to System, Preferences, Preferred Applications, Multimedia, and change Multimedia Player to Caffeine. It should be in the drop-down list. If it's not, choose Custom and type Caffeine as the command to use.
And for the browser in Firefox Preferences, you can change the media player by selecting Applications. Then for each media file type that you want to be played in the Caffeine player, choose Caffeine. It's almost identical to what Tom just described for changing those preferred application settings in GNOME.
There you go.
So good luck with that, Tony. And I think that wraps it up for this episode, Tom.
Are we caught up?
We are caught up.
Okay, so we're going to need some emails and some audio files, people.
Yes, yes, send them in. And until then, our next episode is Linux Desktops, the advanced episode. Hey, we faked you out last time. Last time we had the multimedia special with J. Daniel Sawyer. If you haven't listened to that, listen. Very, very exciting stuff Dan's coming up with. So we will have the Linux Desktops advanced episode coming up. And until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots. Email us with your comments, questions, and your suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic suggestion, use the Podcast Alley button on the left side of our website to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on the Podcast Alley site.
Right, and that Podcast Alley vote does help us.
Oh, it does. It gives us visibility and it makes sure that we are the top-ranked Linux podcast on Podcast Alley.
Ta-da! Send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Really, we will. You can send that to goinglinux@gmail.com. You can also follow our show updates on Twitter. Our handle is goinglinux.
You can download our episodes from our website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there on the show notes page.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.